Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Advertising guru and all-around interesting guy, Donnie Deutsch, is going to join us for a spirited conversation. And we got the news coming as well. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. A survey showed couples often share passwords in their first 6 months of dating, putting them at risk if the relationship ends. Oh, your ex could still have your login information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cyber criminals could harm your finances and your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert and you'll have access to a dedicated restoration specialist. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam for 25% off. Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, has over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Here's one.
Another great book by the Ace Man, Lo Adam Carolla. Podcasts, movies, documentaries, and books. I got a covering Kindle version and field book is audible and being listened to.
Easy for you to say. Pick up I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all-woke, no-joke culture, and leave your five-star review on Amazon. Get all the links at adamcarolla.com.
Donnie Deutsch, pioneer in advertising and business and author as well, has joined us. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. Great to be here.
I'm very interested in advertising, and the reason I study advertising, whereas everyone else is using their DVRs and their TiVos and they power through commercials, I study commercials because I think they're a little snapshot of where we're at. And if you go back and look at spots from the 50s or the 70s, you get a little snapshot of like right where we're at when we're at it. So I find it sort of from a sociological standpoint interesting. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I give speeches. I say exactly the same thing. You want to hold up a mirror to who we are. It's advertising. You know, it's just because it's advertising. Great ads reflect who we are and where we're going. So not only is it kind of like where we are right now, you know, advertising, you know, you want to see where the world is going and be ahead of the curve. And the great advertisers do that.
So you started, I mean, I have some of your campaigns here. We have IKEA. We talked about featuring the first gay interracial couple on a TV commercial, Bill Clinton presidential campaign ads. What are some other clients you've had over the years?
The Deutsch agency over the years has had Volkswagen and Taco Bell and Mitsubishi and Snapple and Bank of America. And I mean, so many clients. It's just, we've worked with a lot of people over the years.
And is the process that they come in, I only know what I know from watching Bewitched.
No Mad Men? You never did a Mad Men?
No, I only would watch Bewitched, and I learned that the client's wife is always super pushy. And they always flew in from out of town, and they have to have dinner at Darren's house. And if everything isn't perfect, the client will get pissed off, and you'll lose the account. Is that basically how it works?
I'll tell you what's interesting about it is that advertising is the one business where you never fire your accountants, most for your lawyers or your bankers, because if they really fuck up, you do. But I mean, it's basically nobody's judging and go, honey, I see your spreadsheet, and I don't really like it very much. Whereas everybody has an opinion on advertising. So everybody's wife's brother, mother goes, the CEO goes home and his wife says, honey, your ads suck. And so it affects people. So it does have, hopefully the advertisers are more sophisticated and they're listening to their audiences, but it is a very personal, subjective business. And yes, that shit happens a lot. It is really. And what they were also demonstrating with everything's got to be perfect for the client. It's such a service business. One of the reasons I sold my company and started moving into television, do other things. It's like, you're just like, you're at that beck and call. That was obviously a kind of humorous caricature of it, but it is a service fucking business.
I should say the podcast is on brand with Donnie Deutsch, and the first episode is going to be available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well.
Can I ask a follow-up question on
yes.
that? Donnie, my wife's in advertising, and she has a lot of the same views on clients. Difficult clients. I'm curious.
Yeah, we always say the business would be great without clients. Yeah.
She has shared several opinions of the same. She has some she loves, of course, but then some that are difficult. Her company is a big company like Deutsch, right. And occasionally it's rare, but occasionally they have told clients basically to fuck off, and they've dropped the clients. I know that's rare, but have you ever had to do that?
Yes.
What circumstances?
You know, because I would never let clients abuse our people. I'm the only one.
Abusive is the word that she used.
And there's some clients who are horrible, and I wouldn't have it. And I would also never, I would never take certain products. I would never do, when we were able to do cigarette advertising, I would never do that. I would do a product that I thought was somehow unsafe or aimed at children inappropriately. But yeah, I told a couple of clients to walk, and it's a great morale booster for an agency. What gets difficult is when you have one of your really big clients, and if God forbid you lost that client, I had to let that client go. You have to let people go. So that's the thing that sometimes keep you from taking the high ground and telling clients to take a hike.
I know the process may be different from client to client, but what would the process back when you were doing this for a living of employing you, would they come in and go, here's my vision or here's what I want to get across? What's your vision? Or pitch us some.
It's the pitch. It's, you know, it's what you basically they get. It's another example. Nobody goes into bankers and says, you know, do my banking for 6 months and I'll pick who the best banker is. Right. Advertising, they come in, they brief five agencies or six agencies. You know, they'll spend 2 or 3 hours. They'll take you through their business, all their problems. And then you go away for 6 weeks, spend a ton of money, spend 10,000 man hours, come back and you make a pitch. And it's a beauty contest. It's a very difficult part of the business.
It's all on spec. You may get the business. You may have wasted 6 months and $1 million.
Yeah, and here's the great thing about it. And then they own the work. I mean, advertising agencies get shafted all the time. Like, you pitch them business, and they can sometimes say, okay, we're going to give everybody $50,000, you know, for their work, which is nothing. You probably spend $500,000 or $1 million worth of time on it. And then they own your work, and they can take your work and not hire you. I mean, it's pretty fucked up business. So I'm kind of... Go ahead.
Who's doing it right out there? Who's impressing you these days?
You know, I don't follow it too much. I mean, I know.
Well, let me just jump in. I like the general car insurance commercials.
What?
Okay. So I got the animated little guy.
That's your audience.
He's driving a Corvette.
You know, like over the years, Nike has always done it right. You know, they just seem to always be on the zeitgeist and get it right. I'm trying to think who
it's Widening Kennedy.
TV. Widening Kennedy has done that for you. Nice way. You are an ad guy. Good agency. You know, what's interesting is to your earliest point, Adam, about it being part of the culture, TV commercials just aren't that big part of pop culture anymore because of all the obvious reasons, because kids are watching TV and it's so fragmented and everybody, you know, so ads exist obviously, but they're not like, you don't get those Where's the Beef ads or the Mean Joe Green ad or the, you know, Mitsubishi. Joe Zuzu. Right. No, you don't get those like big iconic things that really break through because it's just not that big part of the culture anymore. As TV diminishes, the importance of at least TV advertising diminishes also.
I should just let you know that when people ask Brian's wife what does your husband do, he just goes, she goes, sidekick on a podcast.
I don't really know.
Yes, go ahead, Gina.
You talk about and it makes sense, that TV just isn't what, you know, it's not the focus that it used to be. And now we're hearing, you know, like, I mean, I've been in this situation for morning show gigs and stuff, and it comes down to who has more Instagram followers and who can sort of bring the audience with them. So how has the agency sort of got out in front of that, or at least kind of pivoted to this new world?
What agencies do, look, they go where the eyeballs are. You know, one thing that's always going to exist is a triangle between somebody's got a beer to sell, there are people that want it, and there are people that want to sell it to them. I mean, that triad is always going to exist. So what's the answer now? Let's say you're selling, you know, a fashion item. Instead of taking out a double page ad in Vogue, you're going to go to the fashion influencers who have 20 million followers. Yeah. It's such a much more of an efficient way and a passionate audience. You know, they call them influencers for a reason. So to me, so many product categories. I'd put all my money into social media. I mean, that's look, by the way, look at, I have a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old. They don't stare at the TV screen. This is, they're on this thing all day long, you know, and it is, you know, that's the world. So advertisers go where the eyeballs are. There will always be eyeballs. There will always be people that need to sell shit, people that need to buy shit.
Yeah. To an example of that, I can't believe I'm admitting this. There's a thing on social media. They're just called the TikTok leggings. Mm-hmm. I bought them. Yeah. I'll wear them tomorrow.
I know. I got 14-year-old twins that don't even watch Bewitched. So it's like,
what's the world coming to?
Lost cause. But where do you, in terms of trends, so the trends now is kind of a woke, it's like, you know, mixed race couples and gay couples, the stuff you were doing years ago.
I read an ad that showed the first gay couple for a kid in 1993. And I remember it was interesting because we got incredible. It was like basically just two dudes shopping furniture. And up until that point, anytime you saw gay culture on TV, it was a caricature of itself. This is early 90s. So we got so many letters from people thanking us. And then a lot of hate mail also. Now, IKEA was only in major cities. Had they been more national, it might not have been the right thing to do at the time because it was just a lot of people. It was, you know, oh my God, how can you do that? But I was really proud of that. It really, really was.
Where do you think I started noticing the Subaru commercials. Now they're made with love and there's like a lot of puppies and they're not really talking about warranties or drivetrain or Bondurai steel or anything from the commercials I used to see when I was growing up. It was all about the powertrain warranty and, you know, and all that stuff. Where do you think we're heading now? Are we heading further down the sort of good vibes highway? Is there going to be snapback?
It depends that, you know, the younger the audience, you know, you see a lot of, and you and I have a lot of different, we share political views, but we're on different sides of a lot of things. But advertisers follow the money. You know, you see all these corporations with social consciousness. And the reason they're doing it is because if they want an 18 to 34 year old audience or an 18 to 49 demo, which is younger, younger people, research shows, want companies with social consciences, you know, that stand behind the issues they do. So the companies themselves have got to start to take stands or they lose consumers. So they're making moral decisions, but they're making them on a bottom line also. So you're going to see, I think, a lot more in ads, particularly young people, the social issues that matter to them. You know, that's just good business for them now.
That's true. And Donnie, you probably know the evidence at this point is overwhelming in advertising that if you can make a emotional connection to a brand that is so much more powerful than, oh, I hear their whatever, the torque is amazing or the, you know, the braking distance.
A brand is a set of values. And basically you vote for that set of values. And if a company puts out their values, basically it says, here's what we stand for. If you connect with them emotionally, you're going to connect. I mean, that's what the new podcast I have called On Brand with Donnie Deutsch. And every week I go through 10 brands that I think are making a difference. And the whole point is a brand today is everything. A brand is a politician, is a celebrity, is an institution, is a religion, is, you know, Adam Carolla, your brand, your show is a brand. Everything is a brand. So I kind of break down all the things of like how brands are shaping us. Then I interview a big person in and of themselves about their own brand. My first guest is Michael J. Fox. But everything today is brand. If somebody with a Facebook page is branding themselves. You're making a decision how you look, what you stand for, what you want to put out there. So everybody and everything today is a brand.
Do companies, I mean, big companies, well, you heard about it with Georgia most recently in voting laws and companies pushing back and MLB moving. And I think there was some Delta Airlines stuff, maybe some Coca-Cola stuff. Companies must have divisions that are in charge of brand. I mean, they must be opening up new divisions in their company that is
for
sort
social.
Of yeah, not just for social, but just for the general. How are we perceived? How should what legislation should we get behind?
Sure,
what shouldn't we get behind? Like, but
there's different big companies. They have a chief marketing officer, and then they have kind of corporate communications people and people involved in more the political end of it. But really, well, companies bring those functions together. And, you know, usually those things, as far as what we're going to get involved with from usually come from the top. They really, really do. I mean, I've found for the most part that companies, you need the CEO bought in on some when you get behind major things like that. It's coming from the CEO.
There was an episode of Bewitched where
speaking of which, Donnie, I don't know if you can comment on this, but speaking of it coming from the top, but also with IKEA, were you in some way influenced or beholden to your employees? Because in a lot of big agencies, like, for example, gay employees are overrepresented, right, from normal, like, sample of the community, of the population. Were you in some way influenced by just the culture at your work? Do you feel responsibility?
I always felt a tremendous responsibility in my culture, and that's to do good work. The responsibility, you want to do what's right for the client.
Sure.
But if you could do something that's right for the client and it galvanizes, you know, your agency because it's young people and it's a progressive group of people, that's wonderful. But you're starting with what's right for the client, you know. And it's the same reason you won't take a client or put up with a client that is not right for your people. So you work at, you know, it's all of the above.
Who were some of the brands you were highlighting on the podcast that you thought were doing it right?
So the first week, I talked about 10 different brands, a range of brands. I talked about the Elon Musk brand that I thought, you know, I couldn't believe that they were giving him shit. People were giving shit because he's hosting Saturday Night Live. Like, what's wrong with a guy that's fucking inventing electric cars and sending ships to Mars? Yes, he's a billionaire. And we need people like that. That's what pushes us. So the fact that people go, oh, how could a multi-billionaire host Saturday Night Live? Shut the fuck up. I mean, that's stupid. So I talked about the Elon Musk brand. I talked about the Republican Party, who's just, they're just lost, only because I think they're dumb right now. Whatever your politics are, is following Trump is a losing proposition at this point. The numbers don't add up. That's what I can't understand about them. So I kind of, without even getting into morals or policies, just I think it's a dumb winning strategy to go after Trump. So I talked about the Republican Party.
Well, Liz Cheney tried, but they ousted her for that.
I'm talking about in a general election. Right. I mean, the numbers right now don't add up. I talked about Superman. This is going to be a black Superman, and I think it's a smart move for them. I think that it's it's just the time is right for that.
I think
Adam, you're going to jump in. Come on, Adam.
No. I'd heard that Superman, maybe it was a few years ago, became like a world citizen or something. Speaking of sort of woke and brands and sort of it used to be. And then maybe, Chris, you can find the article or something.
Well,
but
the reason they're doing that is what, by the way, that's not a woke company. That's Warner Brothers going, we distribute all over the world.
We got to sell this to China.
And it can't, if he's just an American hero, that's
no, I don't. I believe it's all business. I mean, I mean, not all of it, but I mean, if
it's a business decision.
Yeah, they're doing it out of business. In 2011, Superman renounced his U.S. citizenship.
No, that's breaking.
That I got a problem with.
2011. Well, read that. See if you can find that article, Chris.
I don't want to hear him renounce. By the way, when I think of Superman, I'm going to date myself and Adam. I'm a few years older than you, but how about those old black and white with George Reeves and the leotards and the pouchy stomach? I mean, young people today don't really understand how we were introduced to Superman.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was amazing on those Saturday morning.
We were like, that guy with the pomade, the gun, who dresses to the left, that's Superman. And they didn't have any CGI, so he had to just like jump through a window. It was like him landing. It was always, you'd hear the sound effect, and then he'd just land.
Ta-da.
It was like right up there with Batman crawling up the wall.
Do you remember? What's the one episode of Superman you remember? Did you watch Superman as a kid?
I watched it, you know, vaguely. Okay. I was always intrigued with how they couldn't tell who he was just because he put some horn-rimmed glasses on. And then George Reeves killed himself, right?
He died, for sure. He tragically, I forget exactly what happened.
The rumor was that he tried, I don't want to talk in glibness, that he tried to jump off a building because of those Superman. I don't know if that was true, but he tragically did die. I don't think it was true.
I think that's up there with the Mama Cass Elliot.
Right.
She
choked
on a ham sandwich.
Donnie and Adam, you have to remember, Superman doesn't need to be muscle-bound. He gets his strength from the sun. He's the last survivor of Krypton. It's just some random dude it'd be like if we sent Dawson to Krypton. Like, he doesn't have to be muscle-bound. It's just the proximity of the sun.
You're that nerd!
If he's got a gun, it just doesn't work. And this is not, I don't want to shame
people. He's just some guy from Krypton.
But it was, he died from a gunshot wound in the head in 1959.
Faster than a spinning bullet.
Let's see if he could outrun it with his temple. But that was the other thing about Superman. But to your point, it's like when he then was going to lift a yellow cab up and throw it across Manhattan, did he have to strain? Because it's like,
you're literally super.
Yes. So, sorry, other brands you may have gotten into
it. That are doing
or good or bad.
In terms of my show, good or bad. I talked about, it's interesting. two brands, The Gap and Hollister, like you take The Gap and you go like, why would anybody go to The Gap anymore? And so what do they do? Smart move. They subjugate their own brand and they bring in Kanye, and they're going to have an entire Kanye line. So all these people who don't even give a fuck about The Gap will be fleeing to The Gap.
That's funny because The Gap could do no wrong, like circa 1998.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even before that, early 90s. But now you talk young kids, they're not going to The Gap. And Hollister's doing the same thing with the D'Amelio sisters, you know, who have 80 trillion TikTok followers. So that's what tired brands that need facelifts now are doing. I don't even say they're just collaborations. They're taking something and sticking it as a cherry on top of their own brand. And that's the way to immediately kind of make yourself a fresh brand.
I think the Gap logo, I think there was something with Kanye and his logo.
That was Walmart.
That was Walmart being too close to the Walmart.
Walmart was suing Kanye, the Yeezy brand, for the kind of the sunburst logo.
Who's cease and desist. I believe there's a genius in logos because it's like a really good song that's under 3 minutes, like a great Beatles song that doesn't go on past 3 minutes, or a great joke with just a very limited number of words in it. Like, I believe conveying as much as you can convey in this very short time. Sure. As you speed down the highway at 70 miles an hour, you're able to see something in the distance and you know everything about it or what that.
But instead of the logo itself, if we wind the clock back and I said, okay, well, there's this new company and it's a search engine and we're going to call it Google. Look at this. You go, what the fuck? Google's great now because you put Google behind it in your mind. Same thing with the Nike swoosh. You know, the Nike swoosh is brilliant. You would just look at that for the first time and go, all right. Now, we know it now. So you go, oh, what a brilliant. So I think it's what's behind it that makes the logo. Another brand that I talk about on the show, this is Matthew McConaughey.
As a brand.
Everything's brand. And that, he's talking about running for governor. Mm-hmm. And to your earlier point, Adam, a brand is a set of values. And I think what he stands for is beyond the stoner next door, but, you know, just a straight shooting guy next door. You've seen him in ads and he's likable and he's kind of not too far in either side of the equation. He's down the middle. And, you know, I think he's a strong brand for that. So that's what's interesting about the show. I'm not just here to hype it, but that everything is a brand. You could talk about a company, you could talk about a person, you could talk about a movement, you know, that everything is a brand.
That's interesting. And
Adam, let me ask you a question. What is your brand? What do you think your brand is?
I don't think I have one. I'm not aware of a brand. It's funny. Somebody asked me years ago, what's the plan? And I said, I don't have a plan. I just get up and show up and go to work. And I don't really have a – I'm not aware of whatever my brand is, but I do realize that there's a chasm between how I think of myself and how other people think of me, which is, you know
– So you think yourself a more of a Brad Pitt leading man, but other people may think different.
McConaughey, but yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But – no, I think of myself, well, so I generally think, why would anyone care what my brand would be? That would be my jumping off point. Like, what do I need a brand for?
Because that's, by the way, everything you do, you care because you're doing a very successful podcast show. You have a huge audience and you want it to continue to be huge. So every guest that you book, every kind of statement you make, everything adds up to, this is what Adam Carolla stands for. And that's what I choose. That's why I choose Adam Carolla versus another podcast. So whether it is your, you know, this kind of like, whoa, I got to be the sanity check on wokeism and straight talk, funny. But guess what? Comedians, you know, I don't have to be this super liberal guy just because I'm a comedian and things like that. Like, there's an essence to a lot of the things that you do.
Yeah. I just say what I'm thinking at the time that I'm thinking it.
Okay, then part of your brand is just unpredictability and it's just this raw kind of raw communicator that is not premeditated and tells it like it is, doesn't give a fuck. That's all part of your brand.
I would liken it to maybe whatever Bill Maher is. Like, when Bill Maher says something, I think that's what he believes. I don't think that about everyone on TV.
But you're describing. You're describing a subset of his brand is that he's authentic, but his brand is liberal, you know, hard left, tell it like it fucking is for the most part, but we'll call the shots on the other side also with tremendous irreverence. So it's authentic. He says it like it, but his brand is, it lives in a bigger place, you know?
Okay.
He's kind of this no bullshit. I mean, I think he's brilliant. He's kind of this no bullshit, comes hard from the left, but we'll call it like it is when the left is out of fucking control. And that's what gives him credibility. And he's just a funny dude, you know?
Yeah, I guess I think of myself as a version of that. Like, it just, here's what I'm thinking.
I got you.
And I secretly suspect you would know a lot more about this, but what is attractive about Matthew McConaughey is that we are super attracted to people who are comfortable in their own skin. And he seems to be the most comfortable in his own skin. When you see the starlet who's had too much plastic surgery, we're kind of repelled because she doesn't feel comfortable.
Yeah, they're uneasy.
And, you know, when the politician starts sweating too much, we're like, what is that guy hiding or whatever it is. We as people are innately attracted to discomfort. No one is, you know.
There's another word for that. Authenticity. That's what you're talking about, Bill Maher. By the way, Donald Trump, you know, love him or hate him, authentic, man. I mean, talk about a guy comfortable in his own skin. I can't stand him, but what people related to about him and what they were engaged about is like, forget what he's saying. And I could even disagree with it. They actually thought he was always telling the truth because of the way he talked and the way he talked to people and how comfortable he was. And he didn't feel like it was so.
Yeah.
Yes. The guy was authentic. And people hadn't seen that in a politician.
On the other side of the aisle, there's President Obama. He seems exquisitely comfortable in his own skin.
Are you saying that facetiously?
No. He seems exquisitely.
He knows who he is and he's just, you know, and so, yeah, I think that's what we relate to. Now, the ultimate president who was probably the most unlike president in history until Trump was Richard Nixon, who was the most uncomfortable guy in his own skin. You'd come on, you'd see him and whatnot. Bill Clinton was another guy who was comfortable in his own skin, as was Ronald Reagan. So this authenticity, this is who I am, and I like who I am, and kind of, you know, that's what works with whether it's a Matthew McConaughey or a politician.
Yeah, and I don't think people articulate it very well because I don't know if they even know what they're thinking or being attracted to. But I think you couldn't get any further apart than Trump and Obama, but they do share the authenticity. And it was enough to get them both into the White House.
It's a great insight. It's a great insight.
Oh, really? I'll take it.
Run with it.
You did your work today. You know, you earned your paycheck today. You know.
All right. Well, let's go out on top, and I'll give you a nice plug, Donnie Deutsch. Donnie Deutsch. First episode's available now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. And I'm going to listen because I'm curious. How's Michael J. Fox doing? How's his health?
He's great. You know, he fights it. You know, he's a guy, his brand is about optimism, and it's amazing when you talk to him how he's the ultimate, you know, life gives you a lemon and turn it to lemonade. And his new book was inspired because with all he's been through, then he went through horrible back surgery where he was almost paralyzed. He's recovered from the back surgery, falls down in the kitchen, breaks his arm, and he's laying there and he's saying to himself, how can I continue to be Mr. Fucking Optimistic? I mean, how many times can I get dumped on? And yet picks himself up literally and figuratively and goes on. So his brand is about optimism, inspiration. He's feeling great. He's a wonderful guy, great dad, great husband. He's good buddy of mine.
Well, and Michael J. Fox is in some ways the ultimate litmus test because if you don't like him, you're the asshole. You have to really take a good look in the mirror and see what's wrong with you if you don't like Michael J. Fox.
He could be up there. I would say Tom Hanks.
Yes.
Michael J. Fox. Yes. There are certain guys that are just beloved, you know, but particularly I put Michael at the top of the list.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't like Michael. It's like you got to turn in your human card, you know?
Yes. Mm. Agreed.
The podcast, once again, On Brand with Donnie Deutsch. Thank you, Donnie, for joining us.
Hey, guys. Appreciate it. Come back anytime.
Please. That was fun and enlightening. All right. Let me hit... Essay. That's right. Multi-use face mask, the perfect piece of protective gear for your next adventure. We use these things, like I said, in Reno quite extensively.
Yeah, we do a lot of walking on our trips, and it was real chilly to where you were feeling. So we needed the mask for our face.
Perfect for your next outdoor adventure, whether you're working in the sun or the cold, or hunting or hiking, fishing, skiing, biking, dozens of eye-catching designs for men and women, children. One size fits all, machine washable, and a lifetime warranty. In partnership with Operation Gratitude, they've donated over 100,000 face shields to those on the front lines of the pandemic. Every order, SA donates one face shield to the first responder. So, good company, good business, and they give back to the community. It's SA. Right, Dawson?
Stay protected outdoors, because right now you can get an insane deal. Buy one, get four free. $150 value for just $24.99. Just go to safishing.com/Adam to get five face shields for the price of one, plus a lifetime warranty and free returns if you're not satisfied. That's safishing.com/Adam.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back with the news right after this.
Give me the news with Greg. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff face on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gina. Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
All right. Well, before we get into the news, we'll start with the football clip that we were going to talk about earlier in the show, because you guys... You have to see this. We'll talk about it. We'll do a little play-by-play for those who can't see it. So this story has gone pretty viral, and I'm just going to read you a little bit from the Fox News article. A video of a youth football drill went viral Tuesday, sparked outrage on social media, many wondering whether children should be doing something like this. It's an 8-second clip. It shows a little guy, a young ball carrier, going head-to-head with a would-be tackler. The ball carrier lowers his helmet and runs over the defender, and it appears the two connected with each other. Helmets, and the little boy looks like he got his bell rung a bit. Lots of people from the NFL are retweeting this. Dan Orlovsky said, "This is one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in youth sports." Joel Klatt says, "Words cannot begin to express my anger watching this clip." So I'm going to show it to you guys and get your opinion.
Two little 7-year-olds.
Yeah, maybe seven, yeah.
Run.
Leading with the helmet.
Wow.
You're good.
Yeah.
What Joel Klatt pointed out, which is a good point, this is an obvious mismatch, and the coaches should put, you know, like size kids together. This kid was run over by a more athletic kid.
Yes, clearly. I don't know the earliest you can play football. For me, it was seven. It seems like that seems to be the age, although these kids seem like either seven or under.
Yeah,
like
he looks
seven.
Like he'd be six or seven.
Yeah. Well, if Sonny ever thought about playing peewee football, this TikTok video is gonna dash those dreams.
What do you think? I mean, this is a stupid and obvious question, but what do you think about that clip?
Well, football's contact sport, man.
Are you even allowed to do that, though? Isn't that scary?
Oh yeah, no. What they do, which doesn't really work, is they would punish the tacklers for leading with their head, but they don't punish the runners for leading
the ball,
with your head.
You can approach anything you want.
And so the thing is
hands the face mask.
When the guys, yeah, I know, it's a weird thing. There's crazy face masking going on by the guys holding the ball.
Yeah,
but,
God forbid if you're a defender or a lineman, if you touch the other, brush the other guy's face mask, that's a penalty. But if you're the ball carrier and you're a stiff arm dude and you get all face mask, I mean, as long as you don't drag them down.
Right. They drag them around with the face mask. As long as they have the ball, they get away with a lot of it. I used to do, when I played Pop Warner Football, all we did is these drills. That's all you do. That's
Oklahoma drill.
Maybe, is it because your brain and your body are a little more rubbery that you bounce back faster, or nobody cares?
Kids, you know, they don't experience a lot of injuries. I had a few. I got concussed probably a couple times. Definitely big hits going on. I agree with Brian. I don't know. I was doing Fighter and the Kids earlier, and Brandon Schaub, who played a lot of football, noted that why was the guy filming this one and why did he put these two together? And I, you know, I don't know if there's something a little nefarious there with the coach, like kind of knowing this is going to be a big outcome. Like I should get my camera out.
How dumb is he though? Because now everybody hates everybody involved except the little one that got smeared.
Well, that always works that way when people go, I want to film this thing.
Yeah, put it on the internet.
This is going to be good.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to the Costco and do battle with some Karen about masking, and then I'll throw it up on the internet, and everyone will think I'm the hero.
Right. And they're shocked when they're not.
Right. But it's dramatic. The kid's fine. I'm assuming this shit goes on all day, every day. And, you know, as I say all the time, I mean, you know, a lot of people play football. Most people are fine. There's a lot of issues involving traumatic brain injuries and things like that. It's the stuff you hear about. I mean, millions of people participated in football throughout generations.
We're not like Night of the Living Dead walking around.
Yeah. And, you know, as I was talking earlier today, I said, look, there's this school. There's a school that goes, oh, we should ban football or ban youth football or ban tackle youth football or whatever you want to do. And then you go, why? And you go, well, because it's dangerous and people could get hurt. And then you go, okay, but it's dangerous in that we just shut down our entire world because somebody could have got COVID. You know, I mean, Los Angeles, California got fucked up royally because somebody said, we got to play it safe.
Right.
Everyone stay in your house for a year. But things don't live in a vacuum or a bubble, you know? So you could go shut down youth football, but there's a lot of benefits that come from youth football. And I don't think the analogy is so much different than shut down the economy because we got to play it safe.
Yeah.
Like, true, maybe it'll be safer, but then there's also bad things that come from that. There's a lot of inner city kids who rely heavily on football and youth sports and gives them a, and you get a lot of teamwork and pride and self-esteem and like all the good kind of stuff, all the good positives that you want, like young men especially to have growing up. You can get a lot of that from football. You can get a lot of work ethic. You can get, I'll tell you the one thing that you get that no one really ever really talks about. You learn to rally in terms of you can push through the pain.
Fourth quarter effort.
It's running those wind sprints out. I mean, Brian remembers this.
Of course.
Running those wind sprints out in the San Fernando Valley, you think you're going to throw up, you're lightheaded, you're wheezing, like you can't do anymore. And the coach's like, we're doing one more. Line it up. You get a lot of that.
Excuse me, I played Miss Hannigan and Annie with a cold.
So you know.
Yes.
Well, so Gina gets it, pushing
through.
Thank
you.
And you get a lot. No one ever likes this part of it, but and we've gotten away from these kind of simple, basic truths, but real important lessons. Like, they would line us all up on the sled, be like the five-man sled, the thing you fire out into. It's every football movie. And the coach would always hold the ball out because he'd be like, we're on the defensive side of the ball when we're hitting the sled in this particular case. And he'd go, look for the ball. Don't listen to the count. Look for the ball. And he'd hold the ball out, and everyone would be down in their stance, you know, looking at the ball. And he'd go, sit, hut, hut. And it's, he wouldn't move the ball. And at some point, Higginstaller would, like, lurch forward and fall into the thing. And he'd go, right, everyone's doing a lap. Everyone's doing a lap. And you know you can thank. Thank Higginstaller. And everyone would, fucking Higginstaller. But, and everyone hates that part of life. It's good for Higginstaller to fucking learn because
accountability to the group.
What happens when you're on the battlefield and you fuck up that way? You're driving a semi truck and you fucking pull that.
Your part of the presentation sucks, you know,
right?
Or the pitch to the client or whatever.
Right. That's
thanks,
right.
Thanks, Higginstaller.
So you know, it's dramatic, but that kid will be fine, and you know, we'll live. He'll live to tackle again. But the problem
is, or not.
The problem is, like, I used to play inside linebacker. And the problem is if you're playing inside linebacker and they hand the ball off to the running back and they're doing just a straight-ahead run play, the fullback shall be leading they'll be leading.
Okay.
I remember this very well when we're playing the, the Northridge Knights. And as a middle linebacker,
you gotta shed that blocker.
You gotta step up and you gotta shed the guy, and you kinda got to get your helmet involved. Because if you do not hit him with your helmet, he's gonna run over you.
I mean, you can do that. I thought that was frowned upon.
You can do it. You can. Well, when I played, it was encouraged. You were supposed to lead with your helmet. Oof. That's the way they. You stop the person by hitting them with your helmet.
People talk about head injuries a lot. Wouldn't you break your neck doing that?
A lot of neck injury. When we coached,
had the toilet seat.
That was gone by the time I coached. When I coached, the big thing was see what you hit or see what you tackle. You know what I mean?
Like, get your head up.
Like a heads up tackle as opposed to a head down tackle. You really fuck yourself up.
That kid, the guy who was doing the tackling needed to make a Deion Sanders, what he would call a business decision.
Well, and Brian,
out of the way.
I get it, because when we did Beauty and the Beast, when you do a lot of turns, like maybe three or four turns in a row, you have to find your spot on the wall. So you got to look where you're spinning.
These truths are universal.
They really are. Mm. Ellen has announced that she is ending her talk show after 19 seasons. Oh. The 63-year-old comedian and host informed her staff yesterday that she will wrap the show at the end of the 2021-2022 season.
Listen up, cocksuckers.
The Hollywood Reporter said, when you're a creative person, you're constantly needing to be challenged. And as great as this is and as fun as it is, it's just not a challenge anymore. And she wanted to make sure everybody knew her decision to end the show was made long before all the claims of the toxic work environment. She says she had initially wanted to stop after season 16, but was urged by affiliates to keep going.
Who doesn't go to season 20 when you get to 19? I think her ratings dropped a ton after the debacle.
I think so. And did I hear, I should have looked it up already, but something like she'd been living with Courtney Cox, like sharing, like bunking up with her, like nobody knows what's going on with Ellen and Portia. Does anyone know anything? This didn't come up on TMZ.
I'm not going to fail that test, Gina. Good luck.
No,
it's a lot of life changes
right fishing.
Now.
Keep fishing.
I didn't see that, but interesting to look into. I heard a ratings drop. So now we don't know, like, is this a Golden Globes type situation? Right. Did they do it because of the ratings? Are they doing
it? Expensive show.
She's a wealthy woman.
Oh, she'll be fine.
Oh, she'll land on her
she'll
feet.
She'll be fine.
Oh,
she's laughing all the way to the bank.
Do not feel sorry for Ellen.
Don't worry about
her.
She
will be just fine. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, story, Max.
I don't know
in Malibu.
I guess. I mean, I think she said it had something to do with her house being refinished. But like, really, you can't find an Airbnb. Like, what's going on?
I think she has like 12 houses.
She must
like,
have
number
a few,
one.
I would hope.
Yeah. What's
and number two? But I think I want. I think Courtney Cox is in Malibu, and I think I went to a thing at her house.
Ooh, la la.
That's what I remember. I remember Alanis Morissette was there.
Is this a fever dream?
Yes. And I think we talked about architecture.
Question, because I know you love a lot of the 90s rock and you love like some of that chick rock. I love Alanis Morissette. Do you?
Yes.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. Mm-hmm. She was a major part of the high school experience.
What's your favorite Alanis Morissette song?
Oh, my God. Well, I'll tell you. I actually wrote something, and I sent it to Lynch. I just thought he'd appreciate it. I currently, although I can't really listen to it right now, a month ago, I was out on a walk, and it was like this perfect weather, and like it was the weather that my dad loved to jog in, and Thank You came on, and I fucking lost it while I was walking. I had my sunglasses, I had my mask, so I just cried and walked past people biking with their families and thinking about my dad. And that song kills me. I love that song.
I appreciate Alanis Morissette. You got to tell me your hits, and I'll tell you the one. I appreciate her, and some of her songs I really like, and some I find just to be kind of meandering a little bit.
Oh, that's a good one. And the musical, by the way, Jagged Little Pill on Broadway, great reviews.
Oh, really?
Kind of like a jukebox musical, yeah.
I think
these
hands,
are great hits.
I think Hands Clean. I think that's my favorite Alanis Morissette song.
Ooh.
Let me hear Hands Clean. I find that to be a very sad song.
I like that you pick a song that isn't, I mean, not that it's not a chart topper, but people, I don't think of that song.
I always, I like a little deeper cut. Yeah. I find this song to be very melancholy. But it's a really good song. If
you
weren't so
wise beyond your years, I would have been able to control. You know, a long time ago.
We should ask Deutsch if I'm on brand with this song, because I feel like I'm straying away from my brand a little here.
A long time ago, Alanis had put together a television show pilot called I'm With the Band. Mm-hmm. And I saw it because my friend edited it. It never aired. It was very Spinal Tappy. She played herself, but then they had someone who played the tour manager, the road manager, the people in the band, the agents. And it was some of the funniest shit I've ever seen, and nobody ever picked it up.
Let's see if we could dig it up.
Hey, speaking of, I do love this song. Speaking of deep cuts, my actual favorite song from high school was one back in the good old days when you had a CD or a tape, and you're like, no, let it play. And then a secret song would come on, like a secret track. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite Alanis Morissette song is the a cappella version of the song Your House. You'll know it if you hear it. Do we have that? It is, talk about melancholy. She's snuck back into the house of the guy that broke up with her, and she's like, I know I shouldn't be here, but I can't help it. Oh, this is the music version, but I'm sure it's going to be good.
Is it bad that I always saw her as a creation of Glenn Ballard? Like, she had limited success outside of the Glenn Ballard co-writing, producing. He was the kind of Svengali.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I love this song.
These are great songs. Sorry.
That's okay. This is still great. Walked up the stairs.
Open your door. Oh, yeah, it's a good song. Yeah, she's really talented and really creative. I like her B-sides probably better than her big hits.
Like Ironic kind of became a punchline.
Yeah, like Ironic was one of those songs where they start talking in the middle of the song, and it just got... I found some of her stuff to just be too kitschy or something.
It has
some
that
of 90s
it. Formula is her talky verse.
Yeah.
Sing, you know, right. A hooky chorus.
All right. Anyway, I wish I ran into Graham Parker at Courtney Cox's house so we could play some of his stuff, but okay.
Let's talk about, under the file of They'll Be Fine, the Gateses. And more specifically, the children. Mm. So there's a good chance Melinda will get billions in the divorce from Bill. He's estimated around $150 billion. But the children, they are not going to get the lion's share of that. And we kind of already knew that with Warren Buffett's, charity when you die organization. We kind of had that feeling.
Yeah, I won. Billionaires to make the pledge.
Right. But according to Bill, the children will end up with a minuscule portion of his wealth.
It's got to be weird when Buffett is like recruiting all those people to give the pledge, and then you're like the kid of the old guy.
Come on. What does he know?
I can't watch Matlock tonight. He said I got to go to Warren Buffett's house. For what? What are you doing? Don't listen. That old pedophile.
I was really hoping tonight would be father-daughter night.
Oh, I tell you what, I'll drive you. And it'd be like, you're not heading. Yes, we're heading toward the Grand Canyon.
Jerk the wheel.
If you're the kid and you're only in line for a mil or whatever out of the $100 billion, are you grabbing stuff from around the house? You know what I mean? Like, are you pocketing?
Silverware starts disappearing.
Are you pocketing some rare memorabilia? Well,
I had heard
a
some...
floppy disk with original OS on it.
Schematic.
I heard some stories, about him and his guma or his first girlfriend. There's all kinds of... There's scuttlebutt.
I had heard some weird story. I read some weird accounts online that a lot of this divorce stuff has to do with him befriending Jeffrey Epstein after Jeffrey Epstein was like charged.
So this is Melinda wanting to distance herself.
I read this. I have no proof.
So she's pulling a Seth Rogen on James Franco, and she's not working with him anymore.
Interesting.
Well, I have a conspiracy theory that Mark Garagos gave us sort of half a grunt to. Interesting. Something there. So I was doing Beyond a Reasonable Doubt yesterday with Garagos, and this story came up, and the whole Epstein part of it came up. And then I told Garagos, I said, First off, I don't want to indict anyone for flying on this guy's airplane. There's plenty of times, yeah, where people innocently want to catch a ride on some lecherous pariah in society. Sure. It doesn't mean, a lot. So there's plenty of people out there that are societal pariahs.
Yeah, right.
Who God knows what they're up to and God knows what they're going to do. But just because someone innocently flies on their plane.
Going the same way.
That doesn't mean they endorse any of their behaviors.
Or condone
in any way. So let's upfront.
Crystal clear.
About that.
Yeah.
So he laughed pretty hard at that. And then I said.
Find your name on the manifest.
Then I said, I hearken back to something that Mark told me years ago when we're doing Reasonable Doubt, which is your wife cannot testify against you in trial.
Oh, anyone who watches The Sopranos knows that.
But your ex-wife could.
Ooh.
If some shit goes down with
Ghislaine Maxwell?
Ghislaine Maxwell.
Right.
If God knows what's going on with her, she's trying to cut a deal.
Wait, so what are you saying?
My conspiracy theory?
Yeah.
No Jews in either one of those towers. Not one.
That's not where I thought this was going. I'm shocked.
Well,
wait,
I'm done.
I thought we were talking about Epstein and the Bill Gates.
Oh, I said no Jews.
Microsoft has an alert that pops up.
No. If she was really upset about the Epstein stuff.
Yeah.
And Bill, and I also had heard that he had like a hall pass. I mean, you can look this up. I just heard it from someone that he had a hall pass with like once a year with the ex-girlfriend or something like that. Yeah. So he had some sexual proclivities that may have gotten outside of the union of the marriage.
Okay.
She was very upset about the whole Epstein thing. Now, I think, you know, we could all say if you caught a ride from Teterboro or whatever is into Miami or something. I think that's what Garagos was saying. But if you caught a ride on this guy's airplane and it was like he wasn't even on the airplane, like Epstein was, your wife's probably not going to have not going to be that upset about it. But maybe she knows more than we know.
So she's looking for the divorce so she can talk, because wouldn't he want to keep her? At any cost?
That's was what you're saying.
I thought she wanted the divorce.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
She
doesn't.
She was upset by the Epstein thing.
I see.
But why so upset? I mean, Epstein's a bad guy.
Right.
But, you know, so is Mark Garagos. No, what I'm saying is it's like, okay, but, you know, it's like you can't, everyone who takes a picture with Harvey Weinstein is not guilty or endorsing or whatever. These guys, big social circles, knew everybody, traveled, did everything with everybody.
That's very interesting.
Maybe she knows something.
And that garnered you half a grunt.
Yeah, he was like,
all right, then I'm going to look at it.
He was like, yeah, there's something. There might be something. It's a conspiracy theory, but.
And talk about hiding in plain sight. Who's the icon of nerdiness more than, Brian, but also more than Bill Gates?
I know.
We're on the Mount Rushmore together.
What was Max Baer? Was there a story about him and his hall pass or something?
There are stories that saying that they had a weirdly close relationship the entire time. And, I mean, now it's just all speculation that's the reason for the divorce is his relationship with Anne Winblad.
Charles and Camilla.
But I'm not seeing any confirmation about the hall pass.
Oh, there's not been confirmed?
All right. Keep looking.
Google
me right.
So Warren Buffett in the past, and I'm just saying this off of memory.
Retroactively. What's wrong with doing an Alanis Morissette song, Chris, in the set?
I know you're not a female,
but you sing it a pretty high octave.
You can get there.
Yeah.
And people would love that.
They'd love it.
I'll add that to the list.
They want to enjoy themselves.
Bump that up a couple.
I want to see a list of all the songs.
They pay for a sitter.
Yeah.
They pay for parking.
Yeah. Dinner.
They do a lot. They can pay for dinner.
They want to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
People published that Gates had an arrangement with his wife that he and Winblad can keep one vacation tradition alive. And that's every spring, as they have for more than a decade. Gates would spend a long weekend with Winblad at her beach cottage on the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
Oh, fun traditions.
Where they ride dune buggies, hang glide, and walk on the beach.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's what they do outside. I'd be worried about what they did inside.
Wow.
Those are all daytime activities.
What's the prenup? With $150 billion.
They don't have a prenup.
What?
I heard that too.
I heard that. Well,
I just assumed.
Well, he's got $150 billion now.
Right.
He didn't have
she's
one
not,
then.
I see.
I don't know how far along he was in his career, but it wasn't this.
No prenup.
No prenup.
Wow. Kanye would not
have. Why do I know so much about Bill Gates in the story?
Super weird. But when it comes to the kids, he's going down that Warren Buffett alley. He said in an interview at the Daily Mail, they will be given an unbelievable education and that will be paid for. And certainly anything related to health issues, we will take care of. But in terms of their income, they will have to pick up a job they like and get to work. They're normal kids now. They do chores. They get pocket money. He says, and somewhere in some article, it said a minuscule amount of money was like $10 million each.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, when you're talking about $150 billion, you're probably onto something with that being minuscule. The kids are 25, 21, and 18.
I'm getting a flugelhorn and Top Ramen. Those are
a flugelhorn that you paid for.
Yeah, you need a flugelhorn back.
That's right.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked a little bit about the inductees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Do you want me to go down the list?
Yeah.
Okay. In the performer category, which is, I think, what everybody cares about, Foo Fighters, The Go-Go's, Jay-Z, Carole King, Todd Rundgren, and Tina Turner. I don't know who that is. Okay. Musical Excellence Award.
Todd Rundgren, he's one of these guys you have to be into. Like, oh, yeah, Todd Rundgren. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I have a strong opinion on one or the other.
Hello, It's Me is, I think, his only hit? Or how many hits?
He banged on the drum all day, didn't he?
Oh, he did. He went to smoke the doobie. Right. Yeah.
He doesn't want to work.
That was his. That's, you know, it's kind of a novelty song. Did he write songs for other people? I think he's Liv Tyler's stepdad.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, after Steven Tyler didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
What? Listen to you.
Oh, yeah.
Am I making this up, Dawson?
Oh, I saw the light. I saw light's a good song. Yeah, sorry.
Who am I? If it's not Todd Rundgren.
Yeah,
sorry.
This is
Bart Knopfler. Kid. Never mind. I was thinking something else. Thinking of The Princess Bride.
It's a good song. But I don't know if he's Hall of Fame with Pat
now.
Benatar on the sidelines.
Yep.
All right.
Music Excellence, LL Cool J, Billy Preston, Randy Rhodes. Early Influence Award, Charlie Patton, Gil Scott-Heron, and Dawson, Kraftwerk.
Duh, we're naming it the Kraftwerk Hall of Fame.
You know, their big thing was everyone has been influenced, millions of people have been influenced by Kraftwerk. Yeah. And I say the same thing about fentanyl. Doesn't make it good.
It's good.
Rundgren was thought to be Liv's dad.
Wow. But Liv and Steven Ty look exactly the same.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have influenced suicide all over the world.
Right. Oh, there it is.
Liv didn't find out that Steven was her biological dad until she was 11.
Wow. I gotta say that Kraftwerk's gotta be one of the few bands where the people that are organizing the night when all the luminaries show up go like, we will induct you, but only if you agree not to play. Everyone else, we're begging to get back together.
Right.
But could you imagine just fucking playing this shit in front of a group?
The easiest gig in rock and roll is the stage manager for Kraftwerk. Just put up a laptop.
I'm controlling.
Who was down?
I'm composing.
Can I get into this?
I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
The rock and roll stage shouldn't look like a game show set, which is what this. So, here's what I'm saying. All right, you guys know my rule. If I can't do it, I love it. If I can do it, I hate it.
Right.
So
you don't know how to work a computer.
When John Popper is playing the shit out of his harmonica and then belting the shit out of the song, I go, I could never do that.
Yeah.
I could sneak into Kraftwerk and nobody no one would be none the wiser. That's a good point. I could definitely get out there and hang with these guys.
Yeah.
When Sonny checks his email, you're like, I could never do that.
I couldn't do that.
Could you squeeze into that Tron suit? I think so.
They're in the rocket.
It's all done. Fuck the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Doesn't fucking exist anymore. Sorry, Rami Jaffe. I know you just got in with the Foo Fighters, and I'm proud of you, my brother. But Kraftwerk is in.
It's
off.
It doesn't mean Rock.
It doesn't mean a goddamn fucking thing.
Oh, my God. I would love to be a fly on the wall when Pat Benatar opens that bottle of wine tonight and has to find out the Kraftwerk got in.
Yeah. You know who does a better version of this, and I'm not kidding,
I'm going to take Gary Newman.
I do love... I don't hate Gary Newman.
I got a guess.
Yeah.
The dude at the Apple store?
Also a great guess, but a truly, truly superior version of whatever this is that we're listening to, the end of Revenge of the Nerds. The original.
Oh, yeah.
That's
a
way better version
of
this.
Wait a minute. I got a better version of this. Warm... You ready, Max Spada?
Nerds!
Warm leatherettes. Come on.
What?
Oh, yeah. You make a face, but you... are going to listen to a song that was influenced by Kraftwerk.
A Tear of Petrol.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Don't do this one.
Oh.
Mixing it up.
Warm. Leatherette. Warm.
We should fuck with Pat Benatar. I should be warm. Like, oh, a Kraftwerk and the Warm Leatherettes guys? Yeah, they're in. Warm. Unanimous.
Leatherette. See the breaking glass in the underpass. See the breaking glass in the underpass.
Nina's making a face.
Warm.
Dude from Dayton, Ohio.
Leatherette.
What is this?
Warm leatherette? I don't know.
Warm leatherette.
Leatherette.
Let's listen to Tear Petrol.
Warm. Leatherette.
Wait, what's the name of the song again?
Warm. Leatherette. Hear the crushing steel. Feel the steering wheel.
What a car crash.
Hear the Lonely Island steel. Guys do a better joke feel version of this.
I know.
Warm. Leatherette.
What is this from?
Hey, Rock.
Heaven.
Leatherette. Warm.
I should use this to annoy Natalia.
Warm. Yeah.
This is for like in Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
She's going to jerk the wheel if she's driving.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How long is this song?
How long is
We're
it?
We're not even halfway through.
Wait, I just got to hear the Tear of Petrol.
Warm.
This is from 1978?
Leatherette.
This is the bridge.
Yeah. Warm. Leatherette.
Who is this?
The normal.
Warm. Where are they from?
Are they like Icelandic or
Cincinnati.
It's so funny.
Leatherette.
Dayton, Ohio is so funny.
Warm leatherette.
Oh.
Melts on your burning flesh.
Jesus.
You can see your reflection in the luminescent dash. Warm.
It's a guy named Daniel Miller. This is like the project name called The Normal.
Warm.
He's a British producer.
Playing by AIDS in 88.
Warm.
All right.
Leatherette.
We gotta get the Tear of Petrol.
Can we like fast forward to that then?
Leatherette.
No way to do that.
A tear of petrol is in your eye. The handbrake
in your thigh
penetrates your thigh.
Oh yeah.
Uh oh. Grace Jones.
Grace
we've
Jones
discussed
covered
on this show
warm leatherette.
We've wanted to know what Grace Jones sings.
Ooh, a funky version.
Yeah, this is a good beat.
This is already 5,000 times better.
I bet the intro is going to be 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Grace put some head on her music.
Flat top.
Ooh.
I don't mind this.
This is kind of sexy.
I told you, Gina.
In the wrong hands.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
I've re-thunked my no-fly zone on warm. leather. Do you do the Grace Jones version of warm leather ads? And I will sign off on that.
Okay.
All right. Let's bring it home.
I want to hear this now. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
I also know a lot about building. Got a lot of range, and not a lot of the guys on the site know warm leather ads.
That's true.
And, you know, nailing schedule on Shearwell. That's all. Got to have range out there.
You sure do.
All right. Last but not least, Hyundai Tucson. They reimagined everything, and they've created the best Tucson ever. And it's every inch of it is all new, and it's a beautiful, beautiful SUV. So if you're looking for an SUV, please go look at that Hyundai Tucson. And you can learn more at Hyundai.com. All right. Crank Yankers is when?
Wednesdays.
What day is it today?
Today's Thursday, but we should just get in the habit of saying it's Wednesdays, 10:30.
All right. It's Wednesdays on Comedy Central at 10:30. No Safe Spaces available now on Prime Video, and you can join us Jam in the Van May 22nd, doing a live pod there, Golden, Colorado, Anchorage coming up. Just go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Donnie Deutsch and Michael Tamarillo and Gina Grad and Bald Brian. Say it. Mahalo.
Hey, all you 18-wheelers, anyone see any smoky bears?
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Catch Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening with Teresa Strasser. Bald Brian on the podcast The Film Vault. And a bunch of us other turkeys on a show called The Water Cooler. You can pre-order my new album, Mike Dawson and the Smoking Kills, at thesmokingkills.com. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And for books, movies, merch, and more, go to AdamCarolla.com.
The 2020 presidential campaign in the United States was a pretty wild spectacle to watch, no matter what your political perspective may be. But there was one particular bit of rhetoric that jumped out at me. It was a criticism of Donald Trump leveled by Bernie Sanders that made use of a well-known historical tidbit. Here's what Sanders had to say.
Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Trump golfs.
Nero fiddled while Rome burned. Trump golfs. The senator was riffing on one of the best-known stories from the history of ancient Rome. That is that during a great fire that consumed the Roman capital in the year 64 AD, the self-absorbed Emperor Nero not only did nothing to help, but laughed and played the fiddle while his city burned. It's the kind of story that many people know, even if they know absolutely nothing else about Roman history. For a whole lot of people, the history of Rome is basically just Julius Caesar, beware the Ides of March, and Nero fiddled as Rome burned. So, in a way, it's not surprising that this story has proved so enduring. It's just too perfectly symbolic. If you need a historical example of the ruling elite being hopelessly and heartlessly out of touch, I mean, this is it. Nothing quite says, I could care less, like playing a jaunty little tune on the fiddle. But we really should ask, is any of this true? Did the Emperor of Rome really sit back and put on an impromptu hoedown as his city crumbled beneath his feet? Well, here's the thing. If he did, there was no way he played the fiddle. In 64 AD, the violin hadn't even been invented yet. The instrument as we know it today wouldn't come into being for another 1,400 years at least. To give you some historical context, Nero playing the fiddle is basically the same as Charlemagne shredding the electric guitar. In 64 AD, the violin was an impossibly futuristic instrument. But we do know that Nero was an amateur musician and was particularly fond of an instrument known as the lyre, which was a small Greek harp. He was known to put on long recitals for his advisors where attendance was mandatory. So the original story was that Nero actually played the lyre and sang as the great fire ravaged Rome. But there's good reason to doubt that story too. The most trustworthy Roman sources inform us that the emperor Nero wasn't even in Rome when the great fire broke out. In fact, we're told that the emperor rushed back to the city as soon as he was informed so he could personally oversee the relief effort. So, Nero didn't fiddle as Rome burned, and he didn't play the lyre. He didn't sing. He didn't sit back all smug and laugh as his people suffered. He learned about the fire through messengers and did his best to respond. Now, that doesn't mean that Nero was somehow a good emperor or even a good guy. In fact, he was probably one of the worst. But the fiddle, well, that just wasn't a thing. Nero fiddling as Rome burned is a perfect example of what I call a historical myth, a little legend that got wrapped up in the transmission of our history and often gets repeated as a historical fact. My name's Sebastian Major, and on the podcast Our Fake History, we explore these historical myths and try to determine what's fact, what's fiction, and what is such a good story that it simply must be told. The podcast is one part storytelling and one part historical detective work. I do my best to bring these weird stories from our past to life, while also asking probing questions about whether or not we should believe them, and how these misunderstandings took root in the first place. On Our Fake History, the goal is to celebrate everything that's weird and wonderful about the past, while also thinking critically and trying to grab on to the slippery concept known as the truth. If Our Fake History sounds like it's for you, then subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.